orgasmic carmatic, then you, and female Satan, the fallen.
Orgasmic Carmatic, Betty Doom with me. We are without a female Satan today, so we are not a trio, we are a duo today. So anybody want to call in and ask questions and whatever the case may be, you're more than welcome to. I do have an airplane flying over me at the moment, so it'll be a little noisy.
I can't hear it. Maybe they can.
Of course you can't hear. I'm going to mention that there's an airplane and no one can hear it. That's awesome.
Special effects.
How are you doing today, Betty? You know,
I'm doing utterly fantastic, and I'm so excited for this show.
I know it was actually postponed 2 or 3 weeks from it being requested. It was a request. I'm going to make this very, very clear due to some statements in the past during the request edition. This was a request from a member of InfinityNetwork.com that I'm a part of. My little Kayla's buddies over there. So hopefully they're in here listening and that they'll give a call up, because I'd like to hear from some of them and see what they say about it, because everybody has a really weird opinion on it. And some people don't even really know what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, no, I hear that a lot. There's a comment in chat from Entropic Momentum. I don't know jack shit about the Kleepoth. And that is where a lot of us are. It's where I was, you know, for most of my youth, definitely in education. It's just not something that gets brought up almost ever. But, yeah, no, nobody get confused. This was a request from the Infinity Network. We're going to be getting into some very dark and evil shit here. So, yeah, no, let's not get twisted.
No videos, no YouTube videos, okay? But
it is going to get twisted.
Give honor where it's due. But yeah, so that's our topic today. As goes by different, you may have heard it at different names, the adverse tree of life. There's different theories surrounding what it actually is and who actually practices it and whoever, you know, follows it in their life and why it's so complicated to understand, because, I mean, Kabbalah itself is actually quite complicated, but you flip that around and now you've got a whole new set there that not a lot of people know about, and they don't really, you know.
Well, let's start off.
Wikipedia is not
that
the only place.
Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. Just steamrolling you.
That was my caps lock exclamation sentence. So, by all means, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile to start off with, you know, we're saying the Averse Tree of Life. What is the Tree of Life, and what is the relevance of any of this Kabbalistic nonsense to us as left-hand path-leaning people, as Satanists? Because there's a big question there. To start off, we can say, what is the Tree of Life? That's the most salient, commonly recognized symbol that most people associate with Kabbalah, the 10 spheres associated with the planets, the numbers, names of God, the orders of angels, various things that are supposed to represent the various types of forms and phenomena that occur in the universe and within the human system as well, within like the internal mind-body psyche complex. And that already is supposed to be a pretty perfect, all-encompassing system. And the inverse tree of life, the Kleepoth, is a shadowy, averse, kind of opposing, but pre-existing in most most ideations of it, version of that, a shadow side of the Tree of Life. So if you're listening out there, I would highly recommend that you go Google a glyph right now, an image of what we're talking about, either the Tree of Life or the Glyphotic Tree or both, because it is a very diagrammatic, you know, way of thinking and processing things, and so it would be very helpful to have an image.
I'm trying to see if I have one pulled up already. I came in with guns blazing into this episode. Actually, you know what? If you did go to Wikipedia, they do actually have one up. On the side right here, there's an image of it. Anybody who's read. Sounds like Betty's got an airplane flying over her, too.
I'm going inside where my diagram is pulled up itself, so there won't be any more weird noises.
Yes, there is actually a diagram under Wikipedia of what we're talking about, or at least the Tree of Life thing going on there.
All right, and somebody was kind enough to drop a link in chat. If you're listening live, then you can just click that, but you know that. God damn it. But yeah, no, as far as what we're actually talking about, I would hope if you're listening that people have some cursory familiarity with the Tree of Life, if not the Klepoth, because we're just not going to be able to get into that so much. We're just not. But do you have any comments, Lexi, about like how you relate to that whole system? Because it is a very interesting question. Like, you know, what relevance does any of this have to us at all? The dusty old books of medieval demonologists and Kabbalists and alchemists. What relevance could it possibly have for us looking at it now?
Well, currently. All right, yeah. Honestly, I guess it would really depend on... Personally, it doesn't hold any relevance to me. I'm going to be straight out and honest with that. I don't follow it at all. It's just something that I like to read about and learn about and have knowledge on it. So I would not be able to actually answer that question is personally relevant to myself. I just think it's interesting. I think we have a female Satan, actually. I'm going to... Hello? Hey!
I'm late.
Hey!
I'm sorry.
Hey there!
I haven't been online all week. I'm detecting for 10 days, so I don't have a clock or anything at the moment. So I'm late. I'm actually breaking it to call in.
Awesome. So this is like, oh, God, this is like using a Shabbat phone in an emergency. I'm honored. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're just de-teching. You're going on a technological fast.
Yes.
Okay. Well, oh, my God, I thought you were in jail, girl. So that's fucking awesome.
No. It's just a no. No TV, no cell phones, no internet, no anything.
Okay, well, that's fucking cool.
Yeah, I definitely could not do that.
It sucks in its hell, but yeah, that's where I've been, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Is that the whole family?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, when you're done with that, I'm sure there are going to be some great blogs coming out of it.
Exactly. I told you I had writer's block, so I was planning on doing this anyway, so the writer's block kind of prompted it. Like, well, let's try this and see. That and my having an argument, burst into tears because I told him to put his Nintendo DS down to come eat dinner. I was like, yeah, no, we may be a little overly attached to our gadgets as a family.
Well, there's only one way to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and by attached, I mean, like, I gave birth to these things and I refuse to cut the cord. That's how attached I am to my technological toys. I don't know. It might be something to do with the fact that I can't deal with the people in the outside universe. I don't know. But maybe it just gives me the ability to ignore people.
Well, I'm looking at a really cool frog right now. I can't tell if it's real.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, but seriously, back to what we were doing, ladies. It is great to have you on, Eva, as we've introduced the topic. But it would be great to get any kind of, like, opening or initial statements from you. Like, just how are we going to approach this? It's such a strange bag of worms.
Yeah, the topic, yeah. I don't know much about this, actually. This one's actually kind of alien for me. I don't really, like, dig into that stuff very often myself. I don't really care for that.
All right, well, it's fun for me. So, yeah.
Why not?
Okay.
What you were talking about, Betty. The adverse tree of life, you know, I keep saying it wrong. I say it differently than you do. I say clip off. I think that's just the way I read it. But some interesting things that are parallels that I can draw with Satanism, and I'm not very comfortable with Satanism, but it's the fact that that side of the tree, and I say that side because I have a theory that I like better than two separate trees, but I'll go into that later.
We're going to get into that
focuses,
for sure.
It focuses in on the darker side of things rather than just the lighter side of things, and I find that a lot of things in Satanism do too. They relish the dark and everything that comes with it, and it would be very representative of the darker side of the tree of life.
Oh, very much so. I mean, I like to view them very much together. There is some question as to where is the tree of death conceptually in relation to the Sephira. Where are they? Is it, you know, subterranean versus celestial? Is it behind or within? And I like to interchange those depending on how I'm looking things. Because something that we haven't addressed yet is the actual meaning of the word klippos in relation to Sephira.
Oh, yes.
The Sephira are the emanations, and it also means numbers. It's, you know, classically Kabbalistic and to, you know, a certain degree kind of Platonist, Neoplatonist idea that the perfect divine, the divine, the unitive divine, the creator, brings the world into being by emanating from itself in kind of waves of creation that take on a higher degree of specificity and complexity and individuality and thus kind of imperfection. As they kind of go out. And so the klippos, what that means is shells or husks or broken vessels. And the idea is that in this earliest point of creation before the Sephira, that perfect divine energy tried to come into the world, and it initially broke the first vessels, that became the klippos. And so there was apparently some material there. There was some shit there that was irreducible in this creation process and that did not entirely mesh with the plan, because it's a very intentional planned narrative, the Kabbalistic creation story in all of its layers.
Yeah. We have a caller. I'm going to let on while you continue with that. It looks
bring the call,
Skype caller. So if this is a Skype caller, I can't see who you are because it's a 1111111 number, but you are on. So by all means.
The controversy.
It's the troll.
And that's your ship. Anyway. and intelligence. They're tired of you.
Oh, well, we don't fucking need this. Is there any way to, like, turn it down? Because apparently whoever our troll is has nothing useful to contribute either. Like, they don't know what the fuck the Kleepoff is.
Well, I'm going to...
I don't know why I didn't
caller.
Expect the troll on this episode for that reason.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that the Fallen Edition has actually come across the ooze official troll yet.
I think we did one time and we thought it was Zach.
Oh, yeah. I think that was our first episode that we came in contact, which, by the way, I don't know if you girls realize this, but we are well into our second month of the Fallen Edition. Random fun fact.
That's cool.
So, I just thought I'd say that, you know, whatever.
Oh, what?
But,
so the troll shows up about once a month. That's cool to know.
Yeah. Yep. Unless, he shows up next week and then the systematics are blown. But I haven't heard from him on the other two shows, so I guess it was just our time. It was our rotation.
There we go, everybody. You got it. You got a menstruation joke on the Fallen Edition. But yeah, no, I said we were going to get into some filthy, evil shit. So, like, yeah, there it goes.
Filthy, evil shit, yeah. Well, at least it wasn't pushing. That would actually have worked better. But thank you for your dedication to the ooze. Okay. Right? You know, let's see. I'm going to put him on again, because he just called in again, or another Skype caller, so let's see who this is. Hello?
Alrighty then. Let the games begin. Who is Paul Valentine? Paul Valentine is an alleged Satanist who popped up on the scene in the late 80s. He popped up on the scene and did a couple third-rate talk shows.
Wait, are we doing this? Like,
No, we're not. All right, well, anybody that wants to call into the show today, if you're using Skype, please register your number. Otherwise, I will not be picking up your number. I'm just saying. Or call from your cell phone so I know where you're coming from, because if there's no area code, I won't be picking up. Anyways, back into our topic. So female Satan, you said you don't know a whole lot about what we're talking about. Do you have any, like, specific questions that you want to ask that maybe, you know, the other people out there that don't know what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that I do know quite a bit about the Tree of Life. And when this topic came up, I was excited about it because I've worked with the Tree of Life before, and I do know pretty much the basics of it. And I know that they all have vices associated with them. Well, then when I tried to look into this topic, I really couldn't find much out there besides, like, warnings to stay away from it. Like, you know, like I pulled some books I had on the Tree of Life and stuff, and I got what she got, that it was the broken cells, that it was broken shells and emanations, but that's about it. I was actually a little surprised. I was like, I figured more people would be dealing with this on some level.
Well, what you can find, some of the early references that you get are obviously in the Kabbalistic texts themselves. Like, you know, Luria had his theory of the Kleepoth, and most of those deal with the problem of evil or theodicy, mm-hmm. or justifying God in the face of God. How can a perfect creator have produced such an incredibly piss poor D+ world that we live in? And so, yeah, no, most of those do rely around that. And the Kleepoth are introduced as an explanation, you know, much in the same way as Lilith is given as an explanation of why women are so fucked up, even though, you know, we had one special custom made. You know, that there was this first trouble beset, problematic creation. And then we get what we've got, and it's the intermingling of the Sephiroth and the Kleepotic influence that gives the world its, like, confusing kind of that character that it has. But yeah, no, I thought you had, I was pretty sure you had a good deal of exposure, female Satan, to the Tree of Life. I mean, my understanding was that, like, you have a fellow at home that, like, this is kind of his thing.
Yeah. And I asked him about this, and he said, yeah, you stay away from those. I said, really? Well, thanks. You know, that really helps.
Oh, well, that's cute.
Yeah.
You will find in, like, the Golden Dawn flying scrolls as well, references
mm-hmm.
to the claypaw, specifically in the Grade Ritual, designated like 5 = 6 or whatever. So I don't know if that's the fifth or the almost six. I don't know. It's not my bag. But in that ritual, the adherent is directed to descend into the clefotic realm for the purposes of observation and immersion. And there's an interesting phrase that is used there, to be as God among the demons. And so there, even in the Golden Dawn system, you have kind of a hint at a way that even, you know, those guys, non-left-hand path as they are notoriously, were able to integrate this system into theirs in a way that would have been, like, positive to and furthering their self-development or whatever the fuck the Golden Dawn's about.
I've got you. Yeah, that makes sense. That's what
even there, there's just not much detail. And so what that says to me is that these things would have been part of the oral teaching of that tradition probably.
Yeah. Now, that's what I did see when I started looking was there's references, but they're very scant. And, like, I wound up on a Ptolemaic website at one point, and he said it was part of the 5th, 6th grade or something like that, and that they didn't reveal that information in written form. And I was like, okay, so it's like a big secret. All right, cool. You know, that's the Lima, so it's obviously part of their oral tradition as well.
Well, there's another early reference by Helena Blavatsky. It's a quote that I'm going to do now. I got to walk inside. That's how this is going to be. But I thought it gave, like, if not detailed, but a very good hint as to, again, how people in the past may have approached this in a way other than simply stay away or as a way of picturing what they despised.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, and I like that quote also because it contained this image of the interpenetrating Tree of Life and Tree of Death, but there we go. All right, so this stands proven that Satan or the red fiery dragon, the Lord of Phosphorus and Lucifer or Light Bearer is in us. It is our mind, our tempter and redeemer, our intelligent liberator and savior from pure animalism. And I think that the mental is another, just, the dark regions of the mind are another thing that is embodied by the clefotic spheres and their symbology. And I really liked that image of, you know, the mind and Satan kind of conflated as both a tempter and redeemer.
I like that quite a bit too. It sounded like, you know, almost like you always hear that knowledge is power, and it can be both destructive and creative depending on how the knowledge is used. That's kind of what sprung into my head when I heard that.
I think that's a statement that could hold a great deal of wisdom for people of approaching themselves from almost any perspective. I mean, I can see even a Christian, a Catholic, mm-hmm. canonical Christian, looking at that statement and seeing something, you know,
yeah.
Not that they could entirely accept it. It would be something to grapple with that they could not just dismiss.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough. It's tough. What is being described by the Tree of Death? Because, on the one hand, it can be related to what is absolutely grossly material, that which is as far as possible from the presence of God. And on the other hand, it carries these very shadowy, underworld, otherworldly kind of connotations as well. And the meaning place for that, for me largely, is, as I already said, the dark regions of the mind. That's, I think, a good starting place for trying to figure out what the fuck were people trying to describe when they made these these diagrams and ascribed all of these names and orders of demons to it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'd agree. I always thought that in a lot of ways, you know, when you break down some of the other some psychological models, you know, you have the id and the ego and the superego. I always thought that the id was kind of like basically where the whole idea of demons came from to begin with, and the superego being more towards what people that are trying to explain when they go with, you know, God and those descriptions.
Well, I would argue that the entire theory of the id and superego and the ego is almost not directly lifted from Kabbalah, but there's a clear influence. It's been simplified and sanitized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you have these parts of the self in Kabbalah that relate to very similar functions that, you know, like I've said, you know, some of them have just been kind of melded together or simplified.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'd absolutely agree. And I always think, too, you know, especially when you're looking into the Tree of Life, it correlates very well to the human condition on a very, very, very base level, I think. I mean, like, I always quite enjoyed that there was a vice to every virtue associated with a sphere and stuff like that.
See, because you also have the seven deadly sins associated to seven of the spheres on the Tree of Death, and I think that that's one of the best hints, because they're so little, like the information there is so sparse. You pretty much have to have an empathic connection to what you're looking at and be able to strike out somewhere from there. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And I think that a lot of it is, especially when it comes to Kabbalism, it always seemed to me like it was some kind of primer for self-evolution, a very, very, very primitive one in a way, in that, like, I always thought, like, they're trying to explain psychology in some way that I'm completely missing because I'm not, you know, learning it at the same way. I'm picking up a book some Westerner wrote, you know, and it's his perspective on it, as opposed to what, you know, an actual Kabbalist would be telling you. I imagine it's quite a bit different.
Well, Kabbalah takes for granted something that Pythagoreanism does, but not in as pristine a philosophical way, and that is that everything can be reduced to number. The difference is with Kabbalah, you have this further assumption that you can tease out hidden or occult meanings from texts and words and from the world around you by reducing their linguistic values to number and examining those in relation to the correspondences the Tree of Life and within that. It's, you have to be very confident in an intelligent, ordered creator and, you know, a cosmos that resembles that in order to even begin the games that Kabbalists play.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's always been my own personal trouble with it, is because I've always had kind of a, I don't know, this is crap, pretty much overriding my brain every time I read anything about it. It's always been, you know, I'm like, okay, well, this is a silly, you know, I actually feel bad for my husband because of that, because he'll try to explain stuff to me, and I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. Why, you know?
You would pretty much have to have a language yourself, like Greek or Hebrew, in which every letter is also a number, in order for it to begin to make sense. Because from that perspective, I guess it kind of does, but you're still taking for granted that you have a perfect map to a perfect cosmos, or that such a thing can be teased out by reduction at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or by reduction and abstraction.
Well, and I think, too, there was, you know, like, with things like the Philippot, there's a clear indication that even in that universe, there's a lot of chaos. I mean, That's always like whenever I read anything like that, I'm like, okay, well, if everything's so logical and ordered and perfect, how did he mess up the first time? How did God mess up the first time? You know, that just seems to me like it's, you know, going to have more of a chaotic base than being implied by what you're saying, and that you guys actually believe that on some level.
Well, look, we're liberated Satanists. We can take these things up and employ them however we damn well please. And so I think that a really interesting way that somebody could do that with the Kabbalah is, I mean, take the entire 10 together, you know, plus stop even, you know, fuck it. The perfect tree when it was in symmetry before it fell. When, you know, Malkuth was in the space of Doth or whatever.
Yeah.
You take that and that is supposed to touch on every aspect, every quality of a perfectly balanced character and a perfectly balanced God and cosmos and whatever. There's this, like, self-reflecting similarity that is attributed to the cosmos. And that can be relevant to us, that the inner world tends to reflect the outer world. If you can drop the bullshit cosmology and metaphysics and morality aspect associated with it, you know, so we could look at it as simply an interesting way of creating symbolic structures ourselves, because the Kabbalah is very cool with that. It's an interesting way of layering different symbolic keys.
In a logical
way, like a logic you can forget you used later.
And that's one of the things I like about it, is that I think it puts things, like the Tree of Life puts things, I don't know, if you want to put things in boxes, it provides very nice boxes for everything to go in. And, you know, like when you start delving into it, you find out, you know, everything relates to a sphere and you can find out what it relates to. You know, and those things are kind of nice, you know, if you do any magical practice, to be able to, you know, kind of pull from, well, this one relates to this, so this is what I'll use. Now, that's one of the things that I do like about the Tree of Life in particular over some other things that are out there, is that, you know, it does kind of order things nicely.
And if you understand that ordering logic, then your basic correspondences that are given to you from, you know, the mainstream Western occult tradition are going to make a lot more sense. You know, you're going to have a much better sense of why you light a green candle for certain reasons, not just because American fucking currency is green. But hopefully most of us are beyond that.
Yes. Well,
I didn't mean to cut you off again.
Oh, go ahead.
This is why the Klipa fascinates me so much, is because it represents that which could not fit in the box, that which burst forth. And so it does have connotations of irreducibility and being very primal to me.
Yeah.
And I would encourage anybody that's listening to this and saying, you know, where would I start to make heads or tails of this myself, to look very closely at the attributions of the seven deadly sins to the spheres of the Klipoth, because it's a type of action, it's an attitude, it's a very, it describes a type of movement and interaction with the world, a character, a gist, I don't know. It gives a seeming of it. So if you look at the second one down, because the top one, like the top sphere, Klufotic Keter, does not have any of these attributed with it. But the second one that corresponds to Hokma would be that of idolaters. And so that's very interesting. I'm kind of talking in circles myself. That gives you a hint of how the energies of that sphere would move, would appear, would seem. Given that there is just such scarce information about them, like how can you really approach them in a way that's real to you or that has a pull to it, rather than just, you know, these are dead names, dead symbols that go with them. Apparently they correspond to numbers.
You know, when I was doing some reading up on this, a lot of people, they refer to the Tree of Life and the Tree of Death as two separate things, like two almost mirror images, but not quite. And as I went further on into reading about it, I actually came across a theory that fit my ideology better than any of the separated ones. And it said that it would make more sense that the Tree of Life was still the Tree of Death, that they were the same thing, they were just two different sides, so almost like a coin. And so whenever I go into talking and debating about these things and discussing these things, I always say sides and try not to refer to them as two separate things. Because, quite honestly, if, you know, the clip-off is actually the first try, quote-unquote, or the first generation, then the Tree of Life is then actually a rebirth of the Tree of Death. It's a do-over that just happened to take on better. So it's pretty much, I would think, it would make more sense to me that they were the same thing.
Yeah, I read something that each of them were actually together. Not like two sides of a coin, but actually like they intermingled together. And that it was looking, depending on which one you were working with, you were working with either the light aspect or the dark aspect of the sphere. I did like that quite a bit because I thought that was a, you know, I always thought it was fascinating that the spheres had vices associated with them to begin with. So when I read that, I was like, well, that might make sense where those vices came from.
Well, I think it's helpful to view the two trees as interpenetrating. I like to view the Klepoth as kind of the crusty shell of detritus around each of the spheres of the Sephira, as well as its rotten core. To get back to, I guess, a very traditional interpretation of this, the Zohar refers to evil, you know, in general, the realm of the Klepoth as the residue of life's hidden and organic processes. So there's very much an allusion to detritus, to decay, to shit. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you start to associate the Klepoth with shit, then that's going to be an even better place to start. Like, if you use that metaphor to begin to appreciate, I don't know. I told everybody that this was going to be like a fucked up episode. That we were going to get into some filthy evil shit.
I was giving it some thought, and the definition, the prime definition of it, a husk or shell, I don't know, I'm playing around with it in my head.
The stinking black earth.
I just imagine like eggs hatching and like the true potential coming out of those eggs. The weird grain.
Yeah, egg metaphor works for me, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Think about it. Say, I'm talking in circles myself, which I'm known for, so I guess that's okay. I was also reading up different people or religions that may be considered to follow this, and some of them may not even know that they follow it. And I found it really interesting because one brought up Christianity. Mm-hmm. Christians actually follow it very much to a T. Because their whole religion is hell-bent on where they're going after life. It's all on death and suffering and sacrifices and things like that. Even their symbol, it said, you know, the crucifix is the main symbol there, but that symbolizes suffering as well. So it was very surprising to me that actually, while it seems like it would be right up a Satanist's path, it seems like it works better for a right-hand path religion to have than a left-hand path, because it seems kind of backwards motion for a left-hand path follower.
It does require subversion and reinterpretation if it's going to yield anything of value to someone walking the left-hand path, I think, because these systems were designed as a metaphor for right-hand path people to misunderstand themselves.
Yep.
Like before we had the computer as a metaphor to misunderstand ourselves, we only had the steam engine, and for people in the Middle Ages, all they had was the fucking Bible. And so, of course, they, you know, expanded on it and created these, you know, immense cosmic arenas filled with orders of angels and demons. But, yeah, no, we would have to subvert and reinterpret that if it was going to carry any value. Anthropic Momentum in Tiny Chat just a second ago made a comment about this weird, you know, quality of the Tree of Death being intermingled and interpenetrating with the Tree of Life, kind of relating to the flow between the left-hand path and the right-hand path in general. And, I mean,
yeah.
I can see a lot of merit to that because the two trees are definitely representations of the same continuum, you know, sides, aspects of it. God, where the fuck was I going with it? Oh, no. But what's fascinating to me is that the Tree of Life has a right-hand and left-hand path.
Yeah.
It has pillars of mercy and severity, and so it already has that balance incorporated into it. And the Tree of Death has right and left-hand pillars as well, and so it's a natural unfolding in a fractal way of that same kind of symmetry. It's just a broader it's just a broader way of looking at it. It gives it another layer of dimensionality. So you have the right hand of the Tree of Death interpenetrating the left hand of the Tree of Life. It can go so many places. I'm sorry. Take a female.
Oh, I was going to say that when you were talking about it, I was thinking that you could probably theoretically, I mean, especially if, you know, you wanted to work with it as a Satanist, you could take and probably invert the Quillipoth and go for more of a spirit down to matter as opposed to going up. That's what I was thinking.
It's definitely a different direction that you're moving,
mm-hmm.
Or it has to be for me. Like, I struggle with this constantly, like, where, you know, how do I want to picture the two trees in relation to one another? And probably because this is an image from the, God, I hate to use the word shamanic because it should only be applied to, like, the Tungus Siberian people. Never mind. But the indigenous pseudo-shamanic practices of Gaelic people, there is an image of a downward growing tree that leads into the underworld and has its roots in, you know, in the sky or, you know, above ground, and branches that reach into the stars within the earth. And that is something I can't exercise from my mind as I'm looking at the Tree of Death, which I tend to see growing downward.
Yeah, that's
and so
what
at the top, I guess, of the Klipoth for me, when I visualize it, the one closest to me, like right under my feet, if we can be metaphorical here, would be Nehemoth, you know, the inverse Malkuth, and it goes down and down and down and deeper inward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than upwards.
Yeah.
It's a downward interior movement.
Yeah, I had read that somewhere, that the Tree of Death was the root of the Tree of Life.
Like, I don't know. So I like to picture them reflected rather than side by side. And I don't know how common that is.
It definitely changed my opinion and how I see it.
Well, I think we've established there can be no authoritative opinion on the truth. At least not until people want to give up their private notes, whoever they are.
Do it.
Wherever they got them and whatever authority they have to have special private notes on the matter.
Well, we can always write our own special notes. And then we can refuse, to go out, create a cycle, let them think that we know something they don't, and we can trade.
I've always said that the true secrets in all of this are things which cannot be iterated. They are not secrets out of compulsion, but out of their nature.
Mm-hmm. So in chat, when we were talking about today's topic, Ryan Biohazard inadvertently called this the Satanic Tree of Life, which I thought was kind of funny. An interesting way to put it out there, simply because I don't necessarily see the satanic side to the adverse tree of life. But I told him that if one was to practice it that way, that you would almost have to have a theistic mind state to put it that way. Did you happen to have an opinion on that, buddy?
That's not unlike Michael Ford's approach to the Klepoth. He takes the kind of broken vessels, empty shells kind of thing, and takes it a bit further and calls them deific masks. And the way that he suggests approaching them is as, specifically empty, imperfect shells that we fill with our essence and with our vitality. And take them, and by wearing them, whether they be the mask of adultery or the mask of the liar or whatever, that that helps to bring the person into a more intimate connection with their own dark nature, to be able to actually claim that. Because it's one thing to say, I reject all that, I'm a Satanist. The usual thing that people stick onto that is, I don't even believe in the devil. And that's fine. I mean, that's fine. That's probably a very sensible way to look at it. But by taking that too far, you can get to a place where you don't even have to come in contact with any of the nasty or evil or truly adversarial or discomforting elements that, by rejecting the one, you supposedly ally yourself with, because you're a Satanist, not an atheist. So, I should make this relevant. It's one thing to say, I reject all that. It's quite another to say, I am a liar. I am an adulterer. I'm a fornicator and an idolater. And if you can find a way to say that in a way that doesn't degrade you or make you feel like an idiot or make you in actuality, a weaker, less effective person, then more power. It's like Anton LaVey said, it's when someone can accept the name of Satan, like the long, dirty name of Satan, which is really an obscene word, into their vocabulary as a syllable to be honored, then he's truly free. Wow, that's actually pretty close to the quote.
Oh, yeah.
I should go smoke some pot.
I actually like that quite a bit because I haven't read a lot of Michael Ford's work, to be honest. I haven't. I think I need to. I would definitely agree with that. And one of the issues that I think exists today is that, the word Satan doesn't carry the same connotations it did when Anton LaVey threw it out. I think then it was quite shocking, and now it's, we kind of shrug at it. It's not as frightening as it was. And I really think that, to accept that, it really has to be, and, different people have a different, psychological jolt to realize, you're not, these things that you believe and have believed your whole life are probably untrue or not who you really are. you know, and I think that the word did that very well in the 1960s. I don't think it does it as well now. I think we're, I don't know, I think society in general is a lot more apathetic to evil than they used to be.
Oh, yes. Hannah Arendt was very big on this in her writing. She called it the banality of evil. She was a student of Martin Heidegger, and they had a very passionate love affair. You know, this sweet Jewish student of his, if anyone wants to call Martin Heidegger a total Nazi. I don't know. I'm not going to open up this can of worms. But, yeah, no, she called it the banality of evil in that what is truly evil anymore in this society, and a lot of Christian intellectuals have commented on this as well. C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton were big on them. Yeah, what is truly destructive to human freedom and human dignity and the human soul doesn't usually come in the form of a Hitler or a Pol Pot anymore, but more of an Eichmann, you know, some puny little pencil pusher that isn't really inflamed with a beatific vision of the Aryan master race and how they're going to subdue the world and bring it under this wonderful, you know, Viking ethic. No, they're just a pencil pusher, and they make arrangements for their Jewish friends to get out, but, I mean, they'll sign off for, like, thousands and thousands and thousands of them to go off to the gas chambers, them personally.
Yep.
So that's the kind of just banal, uninteresting sort of evil that's really running the show and doing the most damage.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, it's definitely different now. I mean, there are so many people that are, you know, they ascribe to the label. And really, I do think that whatever Satan for each individual is very personal. Like, for me personally, it really is Hitler and Nazis, and that's a family thing. And it's a socialism. Like, it's like a whole cluster there of, you know, ideas that I just, I look into it more and more because I literally just abhor the idea, you know. Of
I hate Nazis. Everybody knows that.
Mhm. Yeah. And I know, like I know that. That minute you're like, yeah, no, that's kind of, you know, when you just automatically reject it out of hand and hate it, that's what you have to look at. You know, and that a lot of times is harder than just, you know, throwing around the name Satan willy-nilly.
See, but I think I said something like almost nice about Hitler a second ago, so I am not so myopic.
Yeah.
I think Eichmann was more despicable. So, you know, I'm not... Oh, well. No, that's not what we're talking about, really. But, no, I definitely get what you're saying as far as just people are so inundated with putrid images and offensive images that it's hard for them to find language for what is truly despicable and abhorrent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, well,
I mean,
and
I think that's part of our job in the ecosystem of the world as Satanists is to constantly renew that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, once, you know, like, I was thinking about that with horror movies one day. I was like, you know, these things are a lot more awful than they used to be. I mean, you know, I was scared of Chucky as a kid. That's a joke, you know. Go watch it now. You know, I was like, saw and stuff. I was like, and then that's what I was thinking. I was like, you know, at least the Americans, especially, were relatively apathetic to things that, you know, even people in other societies would think were relatively horrible and evil, you know. And I it is sort of on top of it because what I was going to say is that I really do think that whatever they're trying to characterize with the Philippine for that time period is that exact thing, that thing that most people abhor for some reason.
Well, there's definitely still scary shit out there. You know, our problem is we're just trying to approach it through a screen. Even people of the right-hand path, like, can talk about trying to purge themselves with pity and terror. And, you know, when I talk about our role in the ecosystem, I mean, somebody's got to furnish new images of pity and terror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, that becomes increasingly difficult.
Yeah. yeah, I think it's more difficult now than it was before, for sure. I mean, it's times have definitely changed. I do firmly believe that, you know, it's a different era and things have to really be a lot of times completely reinterpreted or renewed, or else it's going to, you know, anything that stagnates is going to die eventually.
And thank God we start with that premise to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we are definitely ahead of the curve. But, you know, look, I mean, Satanists now are much more nuanced than the devil worshippers of the Middle Ages. Like, I mean, that's something we can definitely bring back to the fucking topic, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd agree. And you know, I really do believe that, you know, at least, you know, the theistic versions of devil worshipping men, that it, I imagine that was quite a big leap to take in the Middle Ages, you know. It's just to go with actually summoning demons and stuff. I imagine that was terrifying, considering, you know, what their culture was in general.
Oh, I'm sure I could have gotten down much more easily, you know, have a brandy and a cigar with some of those motherfuckers than the ones I see now that take the same name. Because at the time when this was a life or death issue, you know, to sit in your basement summoning demons was... it could not simply be an act of childish rebellion. You know, the motivations behind it are something I can barely, you know, imagine. Except I can. You know, you must really, really, you must be totally desirous of opening up a portal to the dark, you know, completely irrational, a godly region of the underworld, and bringing shit in. I don't know. Some of them were probably good musicians.
Yeah. Well, they definitely had the best drugs, too.
That possibility cannot be overlooked.
Yeah, I think about that sometimes. My grandmother, I found out that she's a theist, and that was probably shocking to me, actually. I never really met her. She's kind of my family double, and I actually went and visited her. I was relatively shocked by that, actually, considering that she was raised Catholic, and for her it is, you know, very much, that was very real to her. That's what I found out, and yeah, I was relatively shocked by that, actually. I was like, okay, you know, and she said, you know, she said that basically she hated God. So I was like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that is funny as hell.
She basically said, you know, what did God do for me? Nothing. I hated him. I rejected him and embraced the devil. I was like, okay. Well,
I'll
give
a shit ton of credit. If you cannot get past the whole, you know, no gods, no masters, there ain't shit up there thing, but you're actually willing to throw your hat in for the other team, then, like, yeah, I will give some credit. You know, you may be a little silly, but your heart is clearly in the right place.
Well, exactly. That's what I thought. My mother told me. She said, no, we knew that. I mean, now she lost custody of them when they were very young. But yeah, my mom told me later when I told her about it. She said, yeah. She said we all knew that. That's why she's so evil and scary and terrifying. I was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, those family legends make sense now. You know,
fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But I don't know, see, because that's where I was as a little child when I reached the age of reason, or, you know, because when you're 7, it's not difficult to shake that shit, you know? The world is still very magical. You know, mm-hmm. that's nothing to be ashamed of. But when someone actually sat me down and explained the ransom theory of salvation, like, that God wanted everything to work out, kind of, sort of, but he lost a bet, kind of, sort of, and he lied to Satan about being able to keep all of humanity in eternal bondage and offered him Jesus as a perfect oblation and satisfaction of our original sin. But then when Jesus descended to the underworld, there was this giant, like, lovegasm, and he destroyed hell, like, you know, simply by contact. And, you know, according to the originist heresy, he also, like, you know, shot some cosmic love goo all over Satan and turned him back into Lucifer, where he's been up in heaven since approximately 33 AD. Now, I have been unable to track down the prayer card for Lucifer based on that, but when I heard this at 7, it was like, holy shit. Holy shit. I'm pretty sure I worship the devil. I need to leave now.
That sounds like a pretty epic bedtime story.
No, that was a Sunday morning story, Lexi.
Oh, man.
And before that, I was a good little Catholic kid, you know. Like, I would give shit to gay people.
Why
do you reject the company of women? Are you a narcissist? Can you only know what it's like you?
For me, I do remember this. I got baptized when I was 13, and then I sat down and read the Bible, and it was actually really funny because, like, I took notes every time I had a question, and it was actually the real first time that I decided, like, and I mean,
female Satan?
I read the whole thing, and I had all my questions, and I went to the minister. And I started asking him. Now, my parents didn't want me to go to church. This was like my whole decision, my whole thing. I've explained my upbringing before. And I went through all these questions that I had. Like, I literally wrote a book, you know. And the minister got really frustrated about halfway through and yelled at me, "It's that way just because it's that way." And I was like, yeah, I don't think you guys have any answers. And that was actually one of the first times that I literally just kind of rejected the whole idea of mainstream Christianity out of hand. I mean, like, I remember that I threw my Bible away as I walked out of his office because I was so frustrated, because I was like, he's the one that's supposed to know, you know? It's like, isn't he supposed to know this book and, like, why it says all this stuff that doesn't make any sense?
Well, thank God when this happened to me, when I had my storm out, my folks were in an Anglican phase. And so our priest actually had a fucking degree in philosophy, like weirdness. And, you know, let me walk right the fuck out the door, largely, you know. The situation was explained to him, and he's like, and my parents were like, wrestle that girl the fuck back in church. This is your job. Minister to my flock. And he's like, don't do that. You know, we're going to lose out forever if you do that. You know, Aquinas went through a little phase like that. It'll be fine. But for God's sake, don't try to talk reason to her, because she's figured something out.
Yeah.
You know, and that was his advice. He's like, okay, like, there are certain methods that will not work no more.
Yeah. And like, I remember it quite well, actually, because, like, my dad was like, you don't want to go to church. And I was like, yes, I do, because I want to, you know Jesus and all this. And he was like, and, you know, they had explained it to it in their own way, and my upbringing was strange. But, yeah, and that was the thing, is that, like, when I told my dad what I did, he just laughed. He thought it was the funniest thing you'd ever heard. But, you know, I actually took the time to not only read it, but had my little notebook with all of my questions, and he was like, that guy's not going to have the answers. Nobody has the answers to those questions. It was just like, why did God even create the world? That doesn't make sense. It was stuff like that. You know?
Man, I wish my father had found it cute. He did not. He was like, you know, young lady, we told you to only ask challenging questions in public school. We told you only embarrass the teacher in public school. What is this now?
Well,
what am I hearing?
Well, yeah, but you said before that your parents were intellectual, so they got that, at least, you know. You were probably going to, you know, at least they were like, oh, well, I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, no, that was some bullshit. If they hadn't been so intellectual, maybe they would have been scared and left me alone. Now, I'm so indebted to my parents, because I did get to reject Christianity on its best terms, on its strongest ground. Like, I didn't have to find out, surprise, surprise, later that, you know, not all Christians are fundamentalists and that some of them do have half a brain. Weird.
Yeah. Well, and like for me, it was, it was simply the teaching in my household was more that they were all wrong, you know. And if you go look at Revelation, it says that most people are going to be wrong. But my father built a very strange paradigm that you know, I was raised with, which was like, you know, when somebody quotes Anton LaVey and says it's Jesus, you have very confused children come out of that.
Just keep in mind, little baby, all of these motherfuckers are wrong, and it says so in Revelation.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, you know, now he's explained it all now that we've got back in contact with each other, but, you know, like any time I ever went to church, or I'd be like, I'm a Christian, you know, and I'd say things like, no, might is right is obvious. Look at the Christian Crusades. Yeah, you know, say that at a Bible study group and watch people's faces.
Is it, what time is it, incidentally?
It is 6:05.
We did good.
Yeah, we did good. It was a good show. Our chat room's cleared out because they can't actually hear what we're recording right now. They can only hear it in the archive. Past 5 minutes or so.
Oh, I thought nobody could ever. I thought you just said no one could ever hear what was past 6 o'clock. So this is just like some masturbatory fucking like sewing circle we do.
Yeah.
Well, the studio has like a backup plan for us in case like the topic goes over and I can't rush my white ass to the other part of the ooze and extend the show. They make it so if we go over, we can keep talking. No one can hear us, but they can hear us on archive.
Awesome.
So.
Hey, Lexi.
Uh-huh.
Lex, dear, don't
yeah.
degrade your own people. My white ass hustles everywhere.
I don't shit where I eat, Betty. Trust me.
Fear the white man. No, I'm sure. Shit, no, I'm done. See, that's what I'm saying. That was the best shit after 6 o'clock.
Of course. It's because no one can hear us.
Yeah.
That's what they say about XM radio too.
Yeah. I think the show's doing pretty good so far though. I've listened to them. I'm relatively impressed with us actually.
Were you around for the Troll FS?
Yeah, I heard the Troll.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that our suspicions were not correct and you were not in prison. So, it was a very, very nice surprise to have you.
I feel like I was like, look, this could be such a wide spectrum of phenomena. Let's do nothing.
I don't know. I haven't checked my email or anything, but I know it's got PMs, and I'm thinking, like, I don't know. I didn't really think anybody noticed I was gone, honestly.
Well,
Grace scared the shit out of me. I'm not gonna lie. About day 5, I'm like, does anybody know if like her marriage is doing all right? Like what the hell is going on, man? Like,
yeah, we noticed. And I kept looking on, and then I went on Sin this morning, and it says hasn't been on since July 14th, and I went, oh no, this could be a bad thing.
No. Like I said, I was just doing a check out. Yeah, I should be back for sure, probably on Monday. But I am sort of enjoying myself at this point, but I do miss you guys.
I didn't think you died. I always operate from the assumption that just because someone hasn't logged into the internet, like, for a week, that doesn't mean anything. Like, in fact, they have a life. Life has not left their body. Probably quite the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I took a 2-week hiatus at one point, and that was, yeah. And then I came back then, and Nayana just started. She was there at that point, and Daryl. But I took a 2-week one and I went to Virginia, and I went and visited people, and I did, like, a whole thing, and I came back, and, yeah. Everybody's like, where were you? I was like, I went and did stuff, you know.
Some people go and do stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to drop the phone, but like, that was fucking good.
All right.